Welcome to EE Journal's Fish Fry, everyone. I'm Amelia Dalton, your hostess of this here electronic engineering podcast. This week, we're talking about software development. As Rome was not built in a day, or so they say, so was not your next software project. My guest this week is Simon Davidman, CEO of Empiris. Simon joins Fish Fry to discuss virtual platform-based methodology for embedded software development, what the OVP is all about, and why the heck Simon is riding his bike for 1,000 miles in only 10 days. Check it out. Hi, Simon. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello, Amelia. Yes, thank you very much for having me.
So first off, for my audience who may not know, what does Empiris do?
Empiris is building a technology of tools, a suite of tools, to allow people who develop embedded software to do it in a much better way, in a shorter time scale, and to remove the bugs in a much easier way than they do today. So we're building simulation technology for developing software.
So let's talk about the virtual platform-based methodology for embedded software development. Now, in particular, why do you think this method is superior, and what advantages does it have over, say, other methodologies?
Yes, that's a very interesting question. I mean, so what is superior about using virtual platforms for software development? So traditionally, the way people build a system is they'll build the hardware, they'll build a prototype of it, they'll get the chip back, and then they'll start writing the software. And the problem is that might take a year from the sort of the start to actually getting something to be used by the software developers to develop it. So the first problem they have with a traditional methodology of using hardware is there's a long delay before they can get started. And a virtual platform can actually be created actually before the design's complete, allowing you to short-circuit that completely so that the software can be developed in parallel with the development of the hardware. So that's the first reason, just getting the stuff done sooner. The second is that in modern systems, there's tremendous complexity in the system around the processors. You know, you've got systems not with one processor in there, but many processors. You might have virtualization in there, so the software is in certain silos and not having access to other parts of it, or it might be dynamic. So you've got this tremendous complexity. And the challenge in doing it in the hardware, using hardware, is you don't get much visibility of how it's actually running, because you've got some very simple pod that's looking from a distance at it. You might only see the software bits of it. You can't really see the whole way that the platform is interacting with the software. So the second benefit of the virtual platforms after time to starting is the fact that you can actually see much more of what's in the platform, how the software is running, and control it. So that not only can you have visibility of what's going on in the low levels, you can see the registers in the processes, you can see the registers in the behavioral components, you can see the instructions executing. You can actually, without technology and virtual platforms, you can provide abstractions, so you can have OS aware technology, so we can see, instead of the billion instructions that it takes to boot Linux to a prompt, we can actually watch the operating system tasks coming to life, and there's only a few hundred of those, so you get much better visibility. And the third thing is that you can actually perturb the system very easily, because in a lot of industries you have the problem that they want to know how tolerant the software is to faults. And actually, there are automotive standards which actually prescribe certain things you must do and tests you must do. And in a virtual platform, you've got complete control over everything. So if you want to set a register or a memory bit to be one value so it can't change, it's trivial to do that. And you can do that very easily on any time you like. You can just make changes throughout the system. Whereas in the hardware world, you know, if you've got a board with five processors on it, and how do you get in there and fiddle with the bits inside a processor? It's very hard. So those are some of the things. And there's lots of other reasons. If you've got a hardware prototype, you have one of these that you spent a lot of money on getting it to work. And the problem is you might have developers in five places of the world. Well, do you have to build 5 of these or 50 of these? A virtual platform, you can just send them out to as many people as you like without touching the silicon. And the whole idea of the virtual platform is it's a development vehicle for software, which the software shouldn't know it's not hardware. So it use the production binaries for, you know, a Linaro, Linux on an ARM, so that the software doesn't know it's not running on hardware.
Okay, so Empiris was also founded at the same time as the Open Virtual Platforms Consortium, or OVP. So tell my audience more about what OVP serves.
Yes, so in Empiris, when we were developing our products, the competitors that we saw out there, the other players in the market, the way that their business worked is that they had proprietary modeling technologies that they'd developed, and their business was very much talk to a customer, the customer needed something building. Our competitors would build a model of it in a proprietary way and then sell that to the end user. And whenever the end user wanted to change something, they would have to contract our competitor to do it. And nobody actually liked that as a business model because it was very inefficient, very expensive, and it didn't give the customers what they really wanted. And so with our technology, we realized that the value in our technology was actually the simulation technology and the tools that gives the visibility and the controllability and the verification on top of the virtual platform. And so what we made the decision to do is to take a lot of our technology and make it in the public domain and say this is how a set of APIs and models are for virtual platforms. This is a way of building virtual platforms in a standardized way that anybody can do. And we publicized the APIs, we provided a reference simulator out there, and we provided a lot of models that we were working on as open source. And then we asked a lot of people if they'd be interested to getting involved, and many companies did get involved with it to varying degrees. And just recently, you know, last week, there was a European organization, their whole work that they'd been doing on this massively parallel array and on open virtual platform. So it really has developed. But the idea is to make it a place where people can come and learn how to develop virtual platforms and use the technology in an open, public way with open source technology and not be proprietary. And a lot of our customers love the fact that we work on the infrastructure and the simulator, and we license that as a business, but open virtual platforms is a place where they can come and all the documentation's there so they can build their own models and provide those to the customers. And I guess one of our early customers for this was MIPS Technologies, now part of Imagination Technologies, for their processors. They'd looked around and they saw that they really didn't like the proprietary modeling technologies that people had. They wanted to be able to own and control the model themselves, but make it available in a standard way. So they really adopted the Open Virtual Platforms technology and use it internally, so all of their models come out with that. So OVP, as we call it, Open Virtual Platforms, is a place for people to come and develop virtual platforms, get the technology and use it. And we actually make it free to universities. There's several hundred around the world that use it for education, research, development of hardware, processors, platforms, hypervisors in the virtualization space. So as a whole, we actually don't know what most of them are doing, but we provide it to them. And a lot of hobbyists and actually people who are trying to learn come as well. So it's a public open place for people to come and understand and learn and get access to stuff around virtual platforms.
All right, Simon, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, you told me you're going to be riding 1,000 miles in 10 days. What the heck? Tell my audience more about that.
Yes, it's an interesting thing. So there's a group in Oxford near where I live in the UK that focuses on cancer research, and it's a cancer group. And many years ago, a friend of mine who had cancer talked me into riding with him, and we rode actually with Lance Armstrong 100 miles, and I'd never ridden a bike really before then. And I was chatting to him, and so this group in Oxford has decided to organise this charity run from the north of Scotland to the south of England. There's about 14 people doing most of it, and some doing about 20 doing a small bit of it, and it actually, from the top of Scotland to south of England, it's 1,000 miles, or approximately. I think we'll get lost a little bit, so it might be a bit more than that. We don't have to take the stuff with us, which is good, because if you take all the stuff with it, it's a lot harder. And there's a support vehicle. And actually, it's not 100 miles a day, as it turns out. The first day is 109 miles, the second day is 106, and then one of them's like 65. And of course, Scotland's all uphill, so is Cornwall. So it's a charity ride. The group's trying to raise about $100,000, which is good. And it'll take 10 days, and we're hoping it's going to be warm and not rain.
Well, I hope it doesn't rain for you. Well, Simon, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Great. Thanks very much for having me, Amelia.
So you want a little Bluetooth for your next design, do you? But you'd really rather it be plug and play, right? Why redesign the wheel? And you'd really prefer it was dual mode. Where would you go? To the land of brand new Chalk Talks, that's where. In our most recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled, Announcing the RN4677 Bluetooth 4.0 Dual Mode Module, I chat with Dave Rickus of Microchip about a new module that provides 4.0 dual mode Bluetooth in a ready-to-use configuration and spans the gamut of Bluetooth technologies. You can check out this episode by heading on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal, by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on EE Journal, or by heading on over to the on-demand section of eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can also grab our Fish Frying RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of July 10th, 2015, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.